My name is Dave Reske, CEO of NowSpeed Marketing, and welcome to this edition of In the Now, where we focus on uncovering the myths and misunderstandings of marketing and leadership with some of the world's most interesting people. And my guest today is Mark Osborne. He's a fractional CMO and author of the book, Are Your Leads Killing Your Business? He's been recognized by Ad Age magazine as one of the world's top 25 marketing technology trailblazers. He's also a best-selling author on B2B marketing and sales. He brings decades of experience creating revenue growth systems for B2B, SaaS, technology, and professional services firms. And I probably left out a few other areas. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, David. It's a real pleasure to be here.
You've had some fantastic experience. It's amazing. So congratulations on the recognition you've got from Ad Age and other places. So yeah, you've got some good experience to share. So thanks again for joining.
Oh yeah, it's my pleasure.
So as you know, we always start the show with a, what we call a myth buster question, you know, a provocative issue. And the issue you and I have been talking about is about growth hacking. So yeah. Growth hacking. So, you know, the idea is growth hacking is the fastest way to double your revenue. Is that true or not true? How do you feel about that?
I feel pretty strongly about it, in fact, David. And I think it's definitely untrue, but in the interest of really sort of debunking a myth or and demystifying it, let's unpack what we mean by growth hacking. And you know, you talked earlier that, you know, I've spent a lot of my career in marketing really focused on data and technology and really exploiting, you know, those little ways of gaming the algorithm and you know, sort of ways to you know, find, you know, cheap access and sort of arbitrage and some of those things in my career. What I have seen, though, is that the pace of innovation in that space is just so rapid, it's really hard to keep up. You probably know Scott Brinker and the MarTech conference. They started putting out a landscape of, you know, all the companies that were providing customer data and technology to make sense of that data and the marketing landscape. I think about 2011, might have been as late as 2014, they started publishing that. When they first put it out, it had 150 companies on it. This year, it has over 10,000. So this is 10,000 little growth hacks, all of which, if you'll give them 15 minutes of your time, will convince you that they are the one and only way to double your revenues or to maximize your growth for your business. And what I have seen is that although in the early days of the internet, finding these little exploits and finding these little things could deliver some, you know, sort of spurts of growth, now there's just so many of them. And the idea of chasing the silver bullet or the next shiny toy or the next magical solution, I have seen really take some businesses astray, because someone will come in and make a big pitch to them. And so they'll try that for 3 months or 6 months, and at the end of it, they don't really have anything other than, you know, as Thomas Edison said, they now know one more way that won't work. And then they chase another one for a little while, and they chase another one for a little while. Next thing they know, they're looking at the end of the year, and they've made zero progress because they've gone down three or four dead ends. Whereas what we have seen to be a much more consistent and reliable way to double revenues is to build systems, and systems that are designed specifically to help you, you know, attract more of the right customers. And that talks about, well, who are those right customers? You got to do the work to understand who's that tier one ideal customer profile. What are the personas of those decision makers? What does their customer decision journey look like? What are their informational needs at each stage? That's some work. It's not a silver bullet. It requires you to get in and actually do some thinking and put pen to paper. And then building systems that once you've identified those and attracted those opportunities to move them through the sales pipeline. Again, there's real work there. You have to map out what that journey looks like. You have to make sure you have the enablement materials. You have to make sure you have good scripts, that you're listening in on the sales calls to make sure that they're getting better every time. And then the final piece of activating those, you know, best clients for faster renewals, larger upsells, more referrals. If you don't have systems in place to ensure you're doing that, you're probably not doing it. Because people get lazy about that piece. Once they get them in the house, they don't worry about how long they stick around or how profitable they are. But improving your sort of net recurring revenue, one of the fastest ways to growth and one of the fastest ways to improve your company's valuation that many companies sort of overlook. And certainly not something that a growth hack would ever sort of focus on, because that tends to be focused on things that might bring in a quantity of leads, which gives you sort of a sensation of being busy and like you're doing things, but maybe they're not the right things and not the things that are going to lead to consistently doubling growth.
So the system is really the solution, right? So we're going to delve into more about what you mean by that and what has to go into the system in a little more detail. But let's just take a little bit of a step back into the allure of the growth hack. And so I love the way you've talked about these 10,000 tools, and there's probably another 10,000 companies that
That's
employ
right.
those tools that can help you. And I feel like I get emails from all of them every day, don't
That's
you?
right.
Like
Yeah.
they're all like
It,
promising me,
a bottle of
promising
whiskey if you'll take a 15-minute meeting with them. That was the favorite one I got. One of the, well-meaning business development reps for one of these companies was like, send you a $100 bottle of scotch if you'll just take a 15-minute meeting with me.
Oh, yeah, forward that. That's a growth hack that I can talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great, yeah, that's a good one. Whiskey
So yeah.
for a meeting. What will they think of next? But let's just take a step back and say, what is the allure of the growth hack? Let's say you're a CEO or CMO of a growing young company, and you really have a lot of pressure to grow, right? To drive leads, to drive sales. Why do you listen to this growth hack idea? Is it because you heard something, it really works, you're desperate, you're intrigued, you want some magic? Like what is the emotional thing that is happening in leaders that that lets them, accept the belief and make big bets? You're talking about real money. You're talking about big bets on these growth hacks. It's not like it's free or cheap. What is that emotional thing that drives us into that direction?
I think it's a conflation of a few things. And one of those things is, as I said before, there are people that have had an entire career in marketing where, 20 years, where all of the focus was on digital, and all of the focus was on, exploiting, sort of gaps, in the marketplace. And I'll say what I mean about that. Or just, for the first time, gathering data that was previously not being used, using some technology that was previously not being used to make sense of that data, and then putting that into play. And that created a really powerful result for companies. And a lot of marketing previous to 20 years ago wasn't built on, and this is the one thing from growth hacking as a concept that I'm still a very strong believer in, which is, getting data, testing the bets that you make, and then when you see those opportunities, you do double down on them. When you find something that is working, you don't sort of incrementally move into it. Instead, you go all in on those bets that are working. You always double down for more on 11 if you can. And so there is a legacy of doing something right for the first time did work. And then there's been this sort of explosion of innovation, which has led to now so many people are out there saying, this is just like SEO in the early days, when all you had to do was stuff keywords into your website and you'd go from not ranking to being number one and everyone called number one. And so your business blew up. And it's also, kind of a survivability bias. Everyone's heard those stories, whether they experienced them or not. They've certainly heard the story of someone that they found a little magic way of getting in front of the right customers, and they did it, and it worked, and they blew up an overnight success. But there's a lot more, carcasses on the road to overnight success than there are success stories. But we like to applaud the survivors, and so we use survivorship bias to, sort of pat people on the back for taking those big risks when they do pay off. We sometimes ignore the fact that most of the time they don't pay
So it's
off.
almost like we're looking for magic rather than relying on good strategy and good
That's right.
execution,
I mean, isn't magic more fun than hard work?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things as a digital agency we always do is we always do audits before we
Yeah.
engage with clients. And so, you know, we'll do a content audit or a website audit, SEO, PPC. We'll kind of dig in deep and figure out where the issues are. So what's the difference between kind of finding the gaps or the problems in your systems and fixing them and a growth hack?
Yeah. So, I mean, typically it's, you know, the growth hack doesn't take the time to do that audit, that sort of circumspect perspective of, you know, what are all the things that could be wrong? And then what's the one that if we fix is going to deliver the greatest leverage? And so now let's make a plan to fix that one. And in fact, if you did that first, and then you went out and evaluated of the 10,000 different solutions out there that claim to be the magic bullet, what are the 5 to 10 that might fix that one key problem that you've taken the time to identify and really diagnose? I don't consider that to be growth hacking. And that's where you can get that little bit of magic from layering in a tool that might really solve a problem for you in a way that other people aren't solving it, in a way that can be really powerful for your business. But you have to have that strategic perspective and that sort of holistic thinking to identify first where to focus and then to evaluate the types of tools that exist to find the one that maybe would bring a little bit of magic into your business. But more often than not, you know, people are focused on the wrong things. And my dad used to call it majoring in minor things. And, you know, oftentimes we talk about, you know, founders, CEOs at companies, they're typically obsessed with, I need more leads, more leads, more leads, more leads. And what we found from analyzing lots of companies is oftentimes you don't. In fact, you need to be better and more judicious about the identifying the best leads and then, you know, swarming your resources, dogpiling on those best opportunities to win those. Because if you're not winning the best opportunities in the market, well, then you're left with the scraps, and that can really create a downward spiral that can kill your business. And so I think that's the difference, is taking the time to do that audit starts to create some visibility into, well, where should we focus? And then once you have that focus, well, as part of the audit, you probably also develop some KPIs that you care about. So now you've got some way of measuring, well, if we implement a specific strategy or tactic, is it making an impact? And that's a lot more strategic and scientific than just, oh, well, this new tool promises that it's going to solve all my problems if I buy it. Or, you know, all I need to do is stuff my website full of keywords and I'll be number one on SEO, and that's going to change everything for me. It's that type of magical thinking that really leads people astray.
Yeah. And it's so interesting. I just had a conversation with a client today, and clients get very fixated on specific tools that they feel very strongly about, when it feels like they should be focused on building that entire system, right? From the, as you're saying, the strategy, understanding the target audience, their key purchase criteria, the buyer's journey, all of that stuff is usually so much more strategic than any one particular tool. We have a client that's just so fixated on a particular marketing automation system right now that's kind of broken and hard to work with. Right. And we want to move them to something else that's easy and works.
Yeah.
They don't want to because they love it. And I don't know why. So maybe as humans, we love sometimes the broken system because we're comfortable with it, right? I don't know.
Maybe it's some of that. I also think, you know, there's a kind of self-referentialness in that, like, your peer, your colleague, your competitor, your friendly rival, maybe had a lot of success with a certain strategy, or at least talked like they had a lot of success with a certain strategy. Maybe they were being a little misleading in the way they were telling the story. And so, you know, that other founder is like, well, if they got all the success out of this automation tool, I ought to be able to do it too. And so that's why they get fixated on it, because, you know, they're telling themselves a story that may not be accurate.
Yeah. So let's talk more about that system that you referred to. So we talked a little bit about the strategy, but what's your checklist when you kind of look at a company and you're doing an audit of the entire system, right? As a CMO, as a fractional CMO, you're thinking holistically. What are the big elements you think of that have to be there in a system for the system to work well?
Yeah. So if we think about, and we tend to think of them as revenue systems. So it's not just marketing, it's not just sales, it's not just customer success. Really, all three of those things work together as part of a revenue system. And we think about the revenue system being divided into attraction systems, so attracting more of the right prospects, accelerate, and that sort of goes from they're a stranger to they're an identified prospect in your CRM. And then there's the acceleration systems on accelerating your best opportunities through the pipeline faster. And that goes from, they've been identified prospect through to that first contract. And then there's those activation systems, which is about activating your best clients for faster renewals, larger upsells, more referrals. And that goes from that first contract really into infinity because you could work with them, for a long time. And we have a diagnostic tool. And in fact, I've made this diagnostic tool for free. So any of your listeners that want to go to modernrevenuestrategies.com/diagnostic, it's about 20 questions, a few fewer depending upon how you answer them early on, that'll help you identify pretty quickly is your biggest gap to growth within those attraction systems, those acceleration systems, or those activation systems. And we do this using benchmarks that we've built from a lot of research and 20 years in the business, where we can identify, what percentage of your leads come from a single source every month? Well, if it's too much, you might need some help diversifying those sources, or you might be in trouble. What percentage of your leads are coming from referrals? Well, if it's too low, maybe you'd really benefit from a referral program. What percentage of your, sort of sales accepted, sales qualified leads actually get to proposal? Well, if it's too low, then maybe you're accepting more deals than you should, might need to work on your qualification process. And so by identifying some of these key KPIs, we can then identify, well, which of those three areas is the fastest path to growth? And then work on, all right, so then how do we improve those KPIs within that area? What are the processes and systems we can use to sort of quantify what we're doing today? Because that is a system. And quantify what it is today that then gives you something that the team can sort of rally around to work on, well, how do we improve it? Because oftentimes there's a lot of intel within your company on ways to improve things. And especially when you start to bring your client success and your marketing and your sales all together and say, we're all focused on revenue. And now we're going to try to solve this revenue problem that maybe it fits in attraction, maybe it fits in acceleration, but it's somewhere on that journey. You can get a lot of ideas on how to improve each of those little steps of the process, and to really impact those KPIs.
Yeah, that's really cool. So it's really an end-to-end system from attraction, all the way to activation. I love that. As you think about like the analyses that you're doing right now, are there any commonalities on where the biggest issues or opportunities are for companies? It feels like maybe that could have changed over the last, 10 or 20 years. Maybe, 20 years you might have said, hey, you're invisible on the search engines. And maybe 10 years ago, you might say, hey, you're not doing enough in social media, or maybe you didn't implement marketing automation, or you don't have a CRM. So there's commonalities between issues in the system. Today, are you seeing any of that? Or are you seeing like everybody's got a different problem? The system's broken in different ways for different companies everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. What are you seeing out there?
I think it's a Chekhov quote that's like all happy families are happy in the same way, but all unhappy families are unhappy differently. And so I think there's a little bit of truth to that. I think that also my perspective is slightly different because it's when they finally get to the point of pain that they come, sort of seeking a solution, that's, sort of what I see more frequently. And it tends to be different for people at different sort of stages. I'm continually surprised at how often people will say, well, this channel isn't working well, or I'm trying, trying LinkedIn and I'm trying Instagram and Facebook and I'm trying, paid search ads, and none of them are really delivering efficient sort of leads to me on a, and we use, cost for a cost to acquire a customer, like CAC, and we do a ratio of that with the revenues that come in from customers. And they'll say that's not working. Then I'll go, well, let's look at, what's the messaging that you're taking to them, and what is it about this ideal customer and the persona that makes you think that messaging is going to work? And they go, oh, well, we don't really have an ideal customer profile. Well, it's not really a surprise then that your message isn't resonating, because you haven't taken the time to think about, well, who should you be talking to? And it's one of those, people want to kind of get going rather than take the time to, just as you talked about before, really be strategic and think through, okay, well, who are we reaching? Where are they in the customer journey? What's their informational need at that time? How are we different than all of the other options that exist? So that, and then how does that difference resonate with that person that's in that business context? Like, taking the time to do that makes ads so much more powerful that just doing that and then doing the exact same thing on, you change the messaging, and then everything else you were doing on those three different channels suddenly works because you've taken the time to think through, well, who should I be targeting? And then what should I be saying? And how can I make that different than what my competitors are?
Yeah, I think that's a powerful example. It's so funny because we're in the digital advertising business as an agency. It's one of our service mm-hmm. offerings. And I see the same thing. Clients come to us and they say, oh, that Google thing? Yeah, that doesn't work.
That's right.
And I say, well, they're not a $2 trillion company because it doesn't work. It's because you're doing it badly often. Maybe it doesn't work. I mean, there are some cases where it's not appropriate, but more often it's because clients are doing it badly. I just saw this really interesting diagram, and somebody shared it as a kind of a concentric circles of marketing problems, right? And or opportunities. You look at it both ways. But it was, at the core of it is the product. Is the product the right product, right? Does it have the features and benefits that solve real problems? And then outside of that, there was the strategy, right? And it's the messaging, it's the features you're promoting, it's the target audience, it's all of that. And then there's tactics. And then outside of that, there might be Google Ads, right?
That's right.
It's like that's, and so often, you blame, hey, the Google ad doesn't work. And you're like, well, do we have the right channel strategy? Do we have the right messaging? It's all of that. And ultimately, is the product something people want, right? Sometimes we forget that that's super important, right?
Yeah, and I heard someone use a really great analogy for that too, that, the sort of 5% difference off the tee. So, if you're just 5 degrees off when you first make contact with the ball coming off the tee, the outcome's going to be vastly different than if you're, right on where you need to be. And that comes back to taking the time to really think through from the inside out, as you described, and not starting with the tactics and then, working back to those more fundamental issues.
Yeah. So how do you feel like you need to go about, if your company, doing that diagnostic process? So does it start, does it start at the CEO? Does it start at the product? Does it start at the tactics? You start thinking about systems, like software systems. Sure. Do you kind of think holistically about all of those? Do you look for, the low hanging fruit? Is there such a thing as low hanging fruit?
Right. So, there is in that, oftentimes going from a zero to a one on something can make a world of difference. Mm. Do you ever ask for a referral? No. Well, just start asking. You'd be surprised how many more you'll get. And so like that kind of thing can make a really powerful difference. Honestly, the easiest way to get started is go take the free diagnostic test I put together. And then, we'll put together a free report that'll tell you, well, here's your fastest path. Just because, based on where you are against other benchmarks for other folks in industries like yours, here's where you're a zero that you could easily be a one, which would, do a dramatic job. And then the other thing that we really focus on is, you don't have to boil the ocean or over engineer the whole thing. You don't have to get down to everything being specified in the system. Just capture, what we call like a critical client flow. How do you today go from, you've identified them as a marketing qualified lead, and then they end up either signing a contract or not. Just define what that looks like today. And you'll find that there are some gaps, and maybe Jill does it differently than Jim, but you put the two ways of doing it down, you make a decision that becomes the way. Now that you've just sort of got those main kind of tent poles defined, you can really start to make a difference in improving them. And one of the things that we see be really powerful for that is not just describing it in written form. You know, something like 60% of the population is primarily visual in the way that they interpret things. And so if you can make a map that everyone can see, you'll get your best insights out of a big percentage of your team that you weren't getting before by just talking about it. Because not everyone's auditory, not everyone wants to talk about things. Some people need to see it. So when you just map out that process in a visual way, breakthroughs really start to happen there too.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. It seems like that takes a massive amount of alignment between, you know, let's say demand gen, maybe marketing and product marketing, marketing strategy, sales, customer success. How do you get that kind of alignment? You
Yeah.
may identify the problems, you build the map, but then it's people that have to really work closely together to agree on how we put together one integrated system.
So there's two things. I actually find that systems create a lot of freedom for people to collaborate together. Because when it's Dave, you didn't do a good job, well, that's automatically, you know, sort of a place of friction and animosity. Whereas instead, if it's Dave, the system that you're using isn't working. So you and I can then together talk about how to improve that system, and you're not emotionally invested typically in the success of the system. You all want the same outcomes. And so that's one thing is just adopting that, you know, sort of working on a system together instead of critiquing a performer. The other thing too that we really encourage is creating a revenue scorecard that includes aspects of marketing, sales, and customer success. And everyone on the revenue team has, you know, some compensation that determines on how that revenue scorecard is doing. Now, maybe the people that are focused on marketing, theirs is more heavily weighted to generating the right volume of rightly qualified leads. And maybe the folks that are in customer success, theirs is more weighted to getting more renewals, getting larger upsells, getting some referrals as part of their relationship. But if marketing is bringing in the wrong people, sales can never be successful. If sales is making promises that your company can never live up to, customer success can never be successful. And so you, by bringing them all together into sort of a combined scorecard, then they all have a mutually aligned incentive to work together and come up with creative ideas on how to improve those systems. So many times we see that customer success knows things about what the customers care about better than marketing does. And so when they can inform that to marketing, now marketing can spin that positioning in the marketplace much better, which brings in more of the right people, which then sell more easily and at a higher rate, which creates makes the whole system work better.
I love that. And that idea of a scorecard, an integrated scorecard with all the key functions is really key. And actually, at NowSpeed, we're really moving from reports to scorecards for our clients to help them kind of see how, you know, the impact of the different things they're investing in. So it's a
Yeah.
powerful idea. Well, Mark, we're almost out of time. I really appreciate this conversation. So I feel like we've just scratched the surface on systems. But it sounds like you've got a powerful diagnostic that people can use. We'll put that in the link to this podcast as well. But if people want to reach out to you, learn more about your services or how you can help them, what's the best way for them to reach you?
Sure. So they can again do that free diagnostic test, or if they'd like a free copy of my book, I'll happily give the first 50 folks from the podcast that go to modernrevenuestrategies.com/free download. They'll get a free copy of the book. It comes with all the templates and calculators that we use to sort of build out some of those systems. And if you download the book, you'll certainly get an email from me. So that'll be a good way to connect with us.
Perfect. That's great. We'll put the link to the book. Congratulations on being an author, and it's really appreciate you taking the time
Thank you
to
so
read
much, David. This was really, really fun.
Great. Thank you.